to take a look at your computer today. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be looking at problems with Windows 10 updates with our guest, Peter Green. He's a computer consultant with Infostar.com. We'll also look at Windows tech support scams and take your other computer-related questions, of course, as well. Maybe you've had problems with Windows 10 updates. I hope you'll join in our conversation. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. And Peter, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Always great, Larry.
There have been some problems associated with Windows 10 updates. What are the problems, the major problems that you're seeing?
Well, one of them more recently I saw was I have a number of systems I support with two monitors, and about half of them require rebooting twice in order to see that second monitor. So that's a little odd behavior that all of a sudden that showed up after an update was applied. I think the last show I talked about Windows fonts being were missing,
yeah.
Although they were actually there, but they had to be reinstalled. So I was fortunate enough between the last show and today to have set up another system where I put Windows on it and then brought it all the way up to date with the latest updates, and then installed the applications that I had noticed were affected with dual screens and missing fonts. And I know there are other problems out there. You just, you have to look for them. The thing that bothers me is when Microsoft doesn't acknowledge that those are problems. But you can see it in the tech community that they obviously are, is that the fresh install and bring it all up to date and then reinstalling all the applications, those problems went away. So to me, they didn't do their homework when they were there. There's something that's tripped or triggered in their applying the update to existing systems that is causing the problem. And it is up to them to figure out where. We have a lot, hundreds of millions of users of the operating system. I'm sure those will be fixed at some time, but it's disturbing that they unleash things like that and then they don't acknowledge that there are problems. But yet when you see the discussions, there are problems.
They release updates or patches every month.
Yeah, you don't have a choice either.
Well, I wondered, should you be downloading all those patches?
It used to be that you could control that, but it's kind of like, you just got to kind of take it. You can delay it, but you can only delay it for so long.
Is it a good idea to delay to make sure the patches don't cause more harm than good?
You can try and delay it as long as you want, but eventually it's going to have to happen. I mean, I did that and I just gave up. I just was like, okay, just let them come and deal with it as they come. And, when you have to tell somebody, it's a problem and you've researched it and you find solutions, but the solutions are, for example, the Windows missing font solution is that you have to reinstall the missing fonts and then reboot your machine. If you reboot your machine after you've used it, the solution goes away and you have to reinstall the fonts again. So that can be very, very frustrating to someone that's using their system that reboots it or shuts it down.
And the updates, they typically just pop up. I mean, that's where they...
Yeah. I mean, you get notified, sometimes when you go to shut it down or restart your machine, it says, we're going to apply some updates. Do you want to shut it down or do you want to apply the updates and restart? Pick your method. And then, Larry, I've recently gotten called by a number of scammers that said, okay, we're getting messages from your computer system, and they're always calling me when I'm on my way home. I'm not near my computer. Well, we're getting messages from your computer, so can we call you back? I said, sure, why don't you call me back and let's talk about this. So they said, well, we'll show you when we log into your computer the error messages that we're getting. And I said, why should I trust you? Well, we got your phone number from Microsoft. I said, well, when did you get my phone number from Microsoft? I never gave it to them. They said, well, when you got your computer. I said, no, they wouldn't have this phone number. So, well, we'll show you when we get onto your computer. I said, so how are you going to do that? Well, you need to download this remote, this application that gives us remote control of your computer. I said, why would I do that? Why would I trust that? So there are, and I've listed this as part of the Web Top 10, there are a number of companies out there that do this remote support, and some of them gotten bad raps because these hackers, these scammers, are using good products to get your trust and say, well, look, this is the product I'm using to gain remote access to your system. So trust me, I'm going to show you, you know, what's going on, where these error messages, and just you should hang up the phone on them. There's no way they can associate your phone number with your IP address. And you could ask the question, well, what's my IP address on my computer? Anytime you hook up to the internet, whether it's a phone, an iPad, a computer, a laptop, any device hooked up to the internet has to have an IP address. And to associate that IP address with a phone number, you need to tell that person what your IP address is and what your phone number is, because they can't see the two simultaneously. So whenever you're hooked up to the internet, it's typically a random number, because it's the IP, the internet service provider, continually refreshes these. There's a bank of numbers, but you typically don't get the same one each time that you're logged in. And then to have them say, well, let me show you and give them access to your system, don't even go down that path. Just, you know, hang up the phone. I played with them. I had conversations with them for 15 minutes, and it was not pretty when it was over. But, you know, I said, why do you scam people? Well, we do good work. No, you don't do good work. You're acting like you think you know you're doing good work, but...
You get these pop-ups every once in a while asking you to call support.
That means that you may have an issue with malware or some kind of Trojan, mm-hmm. where, you know, you need to use antivirus protection to, you know, do a scan on your system. Sometimes visiting a website can cause, you know, malicious attacks as well.
But if you get that pop-up, you know, I'd be reluctant to call that number.
Yep, I would not call that number.
Where do you go?
Where do you go? You know, the first thing of, if you're concerned that your system is being compromised, is unplug it from the internet, because then it can't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. It can't do anything. Then the next thing is to install antivirus software that you've downloaded from another system to do a scan on your computer. But when you get messages that pop up that say, it could be as simple as an ad enticing you to do that. So you could shut off, you know, ads, pop-up, you know, ads on your system. But, you know, they're constantly fishing for ways to trick you. One of the latest ones is Netflix has got a scam out there that says, hey, you know, this email is from Netflix, and we need you to, you know, validate your account.
No.
They don't do that.
No, they just don't do that.
Right.
And if, is there software that blocks these kinds of scams, or?
You know, that's
probably
the thing.
Probably not.
That's the thing. There's the only 100% way to be protected is to not be connected to the internet.
Yeah.
Because there's always something that they're going to try to circumvent the system. Whether it's and you know, Windows is saying, hey, we got these loopholes that we're constantly plugging. Apple does not have a lot, but occasionally theirs get compromised. So the only 100% way is to not be connected. In fact, there was a discussion, I believe It was, yeah, it was on a morning show, a drive-in show on a Sunday morning, where they talked about the election and the computers, and the computers are not allowed to be hooked up to the internet. And there's control over what networks the computers for elections are hooked up to, because they don't want access to that. So this talk about, you know, trying to change the election through, you know, computer technology, it's really pretty much an impossibility to do it system-wide. When I say system-wide, meaning the election system, because they're not networked together.
Yeah.
So
they would have to target various individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michelle on Facebook wonders, and by the way, if you want to join in, number to call 1-800-642-1234. Michelle on Facebook asks, what's the best free antivirus software out there? Just talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
She has Windows 10, and it's been hard to figure out.
Well, there's AVG and Avast are now owned by the same company. They may be separate products, but they're both supported by the same company. So AVAST is one, and AVG is another. Malware Bytes is another good one that we've talked about over the years. Another program to help kind of keep your system up to date and eliminate poor registry links and things like that is CCleaner. So it's C and then Cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
Piriforms is the company that does that. They I don't even know how many downloads they have. It's got to be, you know, hundreds of millions of downloads for, and it works well. It eliminates a lot of temporary internet files, eliminates bad registry links, helps speed up your system. And when you go to remove software, it usually is pretty good about doing clean uninstalls of programs.
We have Roger in Park Falls with a question for you, Pete. Let's go there. Roger, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
I've got a Dell E6420 laptop, and I was having problems with it not shutting down. I'd do the shutdown, and the power light stays on, and I think it's the internet light that stays on. And I have a computer guru that came and looked at it, and he asked me if I was doing updates, and I was, and but I wasn't doing the creator's update, so he told me I should do the creator's update, and he thought that would fix it. The other thing he tried was he pulled my battery to make sure that that wasn't the problem, stopping it from shutting down, and that wasn't it either. So now I've done the creator's update, and it still won't shut down. I'll shut it down, and it'll take 15 minutes, and then another time it will take 7 minutes to shut down. Another time it'll take 2 minutes to shut down. Another time it'll take 5 minutes to shut down. Do you have any idea what's going on here?
A couple of questions. So the creator's update is the latest update from Windows 10. I believe it's build 1703. That's the one I was referring to that was giving me issues with the dual monitor support and the missing Windows fonts. So here's another example of potentially, you know, an issue with that update. And when you think about it, there's so many different combinations of hardware and software that's out there. And I've talked about this over the years. Sometimes the order in which things are installed has an effect on how a system performs, both speed-wise and behavior-wise.
Okay.
So some of the things that I would look for in your system, sometimes the act of going in and dealing with settings will fix things. So in your case, so the first thing I would do is I would use a utility like CCleaner, and I would check and make sure that your registry is completely clean of any bad registry links. Okay? That'd be the first thing I would do. Sometimes it takes two or three tries to run CCleaner and cleaning the registry to do that. you don't have to reboot it each time, but you have to cycle through and check and make sure that there, you know, there are no bad links.
Okay.
The other thing I would do is I would go into the control panel, and where your power settings are for your laptop, I would change them all to the default. If you've tinkered with them, that's great. Make a note of what they are and then change them to the default, or even shut them off. And then I would save those and shut down the system and bring it back up and see how it behaves. In other words, shut it down again and see if that helped.
Sure.
Those are probably the key things that I would do. A lot of times with, for example, I'll give you a perfect example with the dual screen support. For those people not familiar with it, when you add a second, if your computer supports a second monitor, and I talked about this years ago, it's a great efficiency booster. You add a second monitor to your machine if it supports it. And when it comes up, you've got your desktop on two monitors.
Yeah.
And you can open one program on one screen, another program on another. You can cut and paste. You can move things around. It's all great. When the update was applied and it took out that when you booted the machine, that second monitor wouldn't come up. You'd have to reboot it again in order to make it work. What I discovered was you could also go into the control panel and say to in the display settings, I don't have two displays, and then say, okay, I do have two displays, and then the second one would pop up, so you wouldn't have to reboot it.
I was doing something with that at church and trying to figure out if I could have a program that came up primarily on the other monitor, or is it a shared monitor and you always have to move it to the one you want it on?
Some of them you can move it to the one you want it on. And some it depends on the application. I've seen it both ways. You just have to try it.
Okay, because it seems like whenever I open it up, it just opens up a blank one on the other one, and there's no way to primarily tell it to move it or start up.
I've seen it where, here's the problem. When you have two monitor display and the application you're looking for is open on the other monitor that you can't see.
Correct.
Yep. So the act of rebooting it fixed it, or the act of going into the Windows settings in the control panel would fix it. But I've seen it where applications where you can say, hey, open up on the other screen, and others where you have to get that screen, you have to take it away. If you take it away and tell Windows you just have one screen, then you're going to have control of your applications on that one screen. You'll be able to work with them.
Oh. Interesting. Well, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Big thanks to everybody who contributed during our fall membership drive. We had more than 4,800 listeners pledging, including more than 1,050 new members. And you donated more than $652,000, so we met this year's goal. Really, thanks to everybody who contributed throughout the drive, and especially those who contributed during my show. I really appreciate that. Speaking of other shows, at 2 o'clock today on 1A, they'll be taking a look at gerrymandering and that case that's coming up before the Supreme Court. That's at 2 o'clock. Right now, taking a look at your computer and computer issues with Peter Green of Infostar.com. And let's go back to the phones and to Nico in Chicago. Nico, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've been a longtime Microsoft user ever since Windows 3.1 or even MS-DOS before that. And I've recently taken a stance against downloading or upgrading to Windows 8 or 10. I just think that the draconian measures by the Microsoft Corporation are pretty extreme, not letting users the ability to, forego the update, and then as well as the, going to the tile desktop and doing away with the traditional desktop. So, my question is there a benefit to users like myself using Windows XP or Windows 7? I know that there's no longer support for XP. and you know what we could do to let our voices be heard.
Oh,
great, great points. So as far as Windows XP, you know, at the time it was a good operating system, and obviously, you know, it was around for a long time, and then you know, Microsoft moved on. It works. The only issues with Windows XP and other older operating systems, where in essence Windows 7 is going to be there as well, is the support for the latest hardware, the support for, you know, using additional memory, the support for, you know, video cards. You know, if all you're using the computer for is browsing on the internet and not looking for the latest, greatest multimedia experience, you're doing email, and maybe it's browser-based or maybe it's client-based, which means that it's an application on your system such as Outlook Express, and you're doing word processing and spreadsheets. I mean, let's face it, you know, Lotus 1-2-3 multi-plan, you know, in the first version of Excel, they still do more than what we need today.
Yeah.
You know, and they have the latest and greatest. So, you know, it depends on what your needs, objectives of using the computer for. So if you don't really have a lot of crazy needs, and needing the latest accounting software, the latest tax software, you know, that's where they're not going to support those older operating systems. So it really depends on what you're using the system for. And then when you look at the newer hardware, you know, boy, there are some blazing fast CPUs that, you know, AMD and Intel put out there. The support for, you know, 32, 64 gigs of RAM, the newer SSD drives, the larger capacity drives and things like that. That's where those start falling short. Windows 7, still a very solid operating system, but Windows 10, it fixed some of the problems that were there with it, networking issues, but along with it, it created this, we've got to take these updates, you know, as they come. I don't agree with that. What can we do about it? Boy, I've talked about this for a long time, where I think this is one industry that is looking for being controlled, you know, where Apple and Microsoft and Cisco and Google and, you know, even Amazon is a player, you know, they got to answer to a committee that says, you know, things have to be done a little bit differently, because, you know, we end up taking the brunt of it. Users, people that work in IT that have to fix and help the users, take the brunt of this, where we have no control, we have no recourse, we have no one really to turn to say, hey, you know, stop doing this to us, because it's creating a lot of problems.
So if you, I mean, you're not probably not going to get anywhere sending Microsoft a note.
No.
You're more likely, and probably not super likely, but you're more likely to be talking to your senator or your congressperson and saying, you know, going through the issues and bringing that up to their attention. And if enough people commented that way, then there'd probably be some action, or there may be some action.
Yep.
Yeah. So
it's frustrating when I remember back when Microsoft was on the Hill and Netscape was around, and the senators were asking the questions on C-SPAN, and to me, they didn't even know what they were reading, because I was listening to the answers, and when Gates was responding and some of the other people responding, they were speaking the truth for one version of the operating system, but lying about the other version, and you could just... And the senators were not even understanding what was even being spoken to them. And yet it was in English.
Well, let's go to Dan in Eau Claire with a question. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter. Very timely for me. I've got a desktop HP computer downstairs that I bought used. I've had it a few years. All we really use it for is some internet browsing, typing documents, maybe some things that maybe a tablet can't do very efficiently, and printing. And I'm realizing that as I looked on something a few days ago, that I was got a message that came up that said I only had 140 megabytes available on my hard drive, and I had better do something about it. And I started looking around and browsing the internet, and I went to my Pi on the C drive, and out of 150 gigabytes of a hard drive, there was only, they were right, it was less than 1 gig saying that I wasn't used, and I have hardly anything on that. I have some photos, a couple videos, not even a lot of photos, 500. And so I'm wondering, and I've done some reading, what is going on, and what can I do?
Which version of the operating system are you using?
It's Windows 7.
Okay. All right. A number of things you can check on. One is you can, if you right-mouse click on your recycle bin and click on properties, you can resize the size of your recycle bin. So it's probably taking up a lot. It's being allocated a lot more space than you really need. So you can minimize that. Just keep in mind when you do that, I'll just give you an example. Let's say you had a video that was on your hard drive and it was taking up 5 gig, and the space on your recycle bin was 5 meg. So a very small in comparison. It would come up with a message when you tried to delete that video and said, you're going to permanently delete this because it's too big for the recycle bin. So okay. I'm just saying it's going to logically tell you, you know, how much space is in your recycle bin when you go to delete something and say, hey, there's not enough room there. So if you make it small, if you make it like 100 meg or 250 meg in size compared to what it might be 2 gig or it might be 4 gig. So that's a way to gain space back. Okay. Another feature is if you go into accessories and system tools and system restore, take a look at what your system restore is set up for by default. It's usually 10%, at least 10%. So you could change that down to probably, you said 150 gig drive. I'd probably change it down to like maybe 2%. So that'll give you some space. And then
I read about that. Read about that, and it was set pretty low, and I just set it to like 2%, like you said.
Right. So that'll give you some space. The other thing is, as you use the internet, are you using the internet on that system?
Yes.
Okay. As you use the internet, all your browsers that you use, so Google, Firefox, Mozilla, Internet Explorer, Edge, and so forth, Safari, they all, anytime you look at a web page, I know we've talked about this over the years, but it's a good thing to repeat. Anytime you look at a web page, what they mean by caching files is that each and every web page that you look at actually is downloaded onto your hard drive on temporary space. So over time, those continue to grow and grow. So as the files are added, and based on the file allocation size for the drive, and usually with Windows 7 and 10, it's dynamic. So every single file, whether it's a little picture file for a button or a picture file for, you know, an actual photo or text, a block of text, it's allocating space on that hard drive. So as you use the internet, it continues to grow and grow and grow. So if you use a program like CCleaner, it'll tag all the files when you go to basically clean up all those temporary internet files. It will tag all those files for deletion because they're not needed. They're just, you know, wasted space. And that's another good way to free up a lot of space.
I did learn that from the internet last night, and I did go into Firefox and Google, and I got rid of enough where now I'm up to 17 gigs, which is great.
Yep.
But when I look, when I go, that's my last point. When I go to my computer, local C disk, Windows properties.
Yep.
The size of my Windows properties is 130 gigabytes, and it contains 154,000 files. And I'm like,
yeah, there might be some old files that you can delete for some of those updates, some of the Windows updates. So you'll just have to do some more research for updating some Windows update files.
Okay, yep. Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yep. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, so it's a good rule of thumb when you start getting down to like 20-25% of your hard drive space, you probably have to do some housekeeping. And keep in mind, when you have RAM in your computer, Windows allocates that RAM, twice the size of that RAM, as hard drive space to work with the operating system.
Yeah. Let's go to Mary and Racine next. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. How are you guys?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Okay. I was so glad to get in my car and turn on the radio and find out that our computer guy was on here today. Anyway, my question is, our son gave us an iPad Air. It's a little older. I have no idea. It's probably 4 years old or so. And said, here, you know, use it for FaceTime. Well, now I'm getting emails on there from his email stuff. I can't get to my own Facebook on it because his comes up and it won't let me change it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, I see there's like a reset that I can do.
Yep.
And wipe everything out of his. Is that a good thing to do? And then I have to go back, of course, and put all my stuff in there like it's a new computer?
Correct.
I mean, is it going to go back that far?
Well, so you've got it's operational. So if there are certain things that have settings in there and you just make note of what they are, you know, so like you said, for your email setup, you know, any application that you're using where you know you have to do some settings, go in there and make notes on them. But when you do that that reset or factory reset, it's taking it back to the operating system with what was shipped on that iPad Air. And then you should apply the updates to it to bring it as current as you can. And then go ahead and start installing software, you know, applications on it. And that will wipe out his information, your information. It's a clean slate.
But it's not going to delete, like, his email address and whatever from his own computer.
No, he's probably had it set up so that he was I'm surprised. Well, I guess I'm surprised, not surprised. He had it set up so that he could use that to read his email that, you know, he probably either for his home system or his work or whatever, that he just didn't delete that account.
Well, our grandson was supposed to do all this, and of course, he didn't do it. So now grandma is stuck with this stuff, you know, and they're in Green Bay, and I'm in Racine, and, you know, I did delete his Facebook account, you know, but it still keeps coming up. It's not gone.
Yeah, the other thing is it's probably associated as a device on his Apple account. Do you have an Apple account?
I have one now since I got the computer.
Yeah, so
I did a cloud ID thing.
Right, yeah. So what I would do is I would do the reset and then associate that iPad with your account because it's still probably based on what I'm hearing, it's still probably associated with his Apple account.
Well, that's what I'm assuming, but I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to wipe out any of the stuff that he has on his phones and other computers.
That won't happen.
Nope, that won't happen. You're okay.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Good luck, Mary.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. Oh, boy. Terry in Mass City, Michigan, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. About the Windows update 1703, I've been pushing that thing back since April, you know. Just like you, I got tired of I can go in and delay it a week. You know, at a time.
Uh-huh.
But I found a way to do it now that works great. I haven't had to touch it in a couple months. Uh-huh. And it's called a Microsoft's Show Hide tool, WUSHOWHIDE. And it's a Microsoft download, KB3073930. And I've sent a link to your Facebook page where a guy steps you through the things you have to do. But this will hide updates that you don't want to update. And works beautifully. It works great. It's been a couple months now. I could check on it every now and then. I run it, go in. Once Microsoft is downloaded and it's ready to install, I can go check it off in this thing and hide it, and it will not install that. They came up with this so you could block installing things that maybe messed with your computer you didn't need. Mm-hmm. But it works very well for this. It's
That's
been
great.
A couple months now, and I'm still waiting it out. I'm waiting. I heard you today talk about it. I went, oh, man, I wish you'd get it straightened out.
Yeah.
But I intend on keeping this thing blocked for as long as I need to, because the new update doesn't do a lot of things that I care about anyway. So.
Right. Yeah, when at work we were talking about it, and it's like, why did they do what they did?
You know? I don't know. But this works very well.
And you posted it up on our Facebook page?
I did post it, and there's a link there that goes to the article at Computer World that talks all about all the different ways you could do it, and this is part of it.
No.
Tells you where to download it and the whole deal. It steps you through this. You got to follow the steps. It's not intuitive a lot of times.
Yeah.
It steps you right through exactly what you got to do, and it works beautifully. It works beautifully.
Terry, thank
Thanks.
You.
Yep.
You know, there's one more thing I want to mention, Larry, that I posted on along with the top 10, was a good thing that people should be doing is going out and getting a thumb drive. And I posted a number of articles about it. And basically, it's if you're a Windows 10 user, you should create a bootable thumb drive for your system so you can rescue it and potentially repair it in case you have a Windows update or a Windows operating system setting that somehow went awry and hijacked your system away from you, because I've actually experienced that. And there are a number of articles that talk about that. Now, what's interesting is I was able to take a 4-gig thumb drive and create a bootable Windows 10 repair drive for my system. But one of the articles talks about you needing something that was at least 16 gig in size. They're not that expensive.
Yeah.
So, but I actually have one in my office labeled that because all my systems are Windows 10 at work. So you can create one to be used for, you know, hundreds of systems. So I've left instructions that if I'm not around and there's a problem, the thumb drive is sitting there on my desk.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, James and O'Connell coming up next as we visit about computers here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of Infostar.com, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. Questions, you can call us at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. James and O'Connell up next. James, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Oh, hi. I have a question for Peter. I have a problem with my Windows 7. I can't get Windows updates on it. It just goes, when I try to search for updates, it searches forever and won't stop. And I think the last update that I got was last December sometime. So I'm kind of concerned that I'm not getting updates, and I don't know how to fix it. So is there a site? Have you answered this before? Is it on your web page?
Are you getting any error messages at all?
No.
Okay. Usually what I do in a case like that is I do a Google search on Windows updates and not receiving them, or asking the question like trying for Windows 7 updates, constant spinning, things like that. And there might be some tools that you can download that will reset your Windows 7 updates. I know I've had problems with systems not getting Windows updates, but usually there's an error message, and then you have to try and troubleshoot the error message.
Yeah, usually I can't swear that over the last 6 months when I've tried this that I haven't ever gotten an error message, but not usually. Usually what happens is that the it's looking for updates, and it will simply continue to do that as long as I'm willing to let it go. So
yeah.
I've been 6 hours, 8 hours, just to see what happened, and it continues to look.
Have you tried, is your registry cleaned?
No, I haven't done that. I'm not quite sure that I'm that sophisticated in case it goes wrong. So
because
how,
that,
how could, would I do that?
The application I've talked about before, it's called CCleaner.
CCleaner,
so
okay.
So it's letter C and then cleaner, so another C, L-E-A-N-E-R. The company is called Piriform,
okay.
P-I-R-I-F-O-R-M. And it's widely used. And when you after you download it, you don't have, I'm pretty sure you don't have to reboot your computer. One of the tools in there is to clean the registry. So what I usually do is I do a registry sweep looking for bad links. And then the first time it says, would you like to save it? I say, yes, I save the file with my initials and a date on the end of it so that I know that it was me that actually did that. And then I have it clean the bad links. And then I run it probably at least once, if not two more times, so that there are no more bad links. But I don't back up that file a second or third time. I just do it the first time. Yep.
Okay.
And then after that, then I reboot the computer.
Okay.
And that way, what's going on with the registry and the bad links in there is that over time, there are applications that are updated.
Mm-hmm.
There are new programs that are added, ones that you haven't used. So things kind of fall off, get out of place, get out of whack a little bit. But Windows keeps track of them. So every time the computer starts up and it runs, it's like it's paying attention to old things that it doesn't need to. And it occupies its time. It occupies its space. And then things start bumping into each other, and it gets slow. So by doing that kind of maintenance work on your system, allows it to operate more efficiently.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago when I did use CCleaner fairly regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read online somewhere that sometimes it causes some real severe trouble, and then some advice from Microsoft was, well, they have a registry cleaner of sorts embedded already in, I think it was, could have been 7. Anyway, so, but your recommendation is CCleaner, and you have no usual trouble
over the years that I've used it, I have had not experienced any problems with it. I've heard from, I think, one person over probably the last maybe 10, 15 years that said they had an issue with it. But my personal, you can look for other registry cleaners, but to assume that Microsoft is taking care of things would not be a good thing.
Okay, there you go. James, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Sandy on Facebook wonders if there's a way to delete conversations on Messenger.
Delete conversations on Messenger. Yes. They are temporary files. They are usually associated with the user. And you can look at those files typically with a browser. You just have to locate the message. They're almost like text files, but they're actually, they can be viewed by a browser. But you have to identify them based on identity to see where they're located.
Okay.
So they're kind of embedded. In Windows, there is a hidden system directory called AppData. So if you go into your user account and then within the user account under Documents, I believe it's under that and it's hidden. You might want to do a search and look for how to reveal app data on Windows, and then you might be able to find it.
Speaking of apps, Jessica in Eau Claire has a question relating to apps, I believe.
Actually, I have a question regarding my work computer that I'm having an issue that our IT department is not able to solve. So I bring up application, and when I go to, it's an internet-based application. When I go to open up a different internet application, it automatically closes the other one. And then when I reopen the original one, it'll open up behind another application. So it's, I'm not really sure as to.
Are they both, when you say internet application, is it browser based? So in other words, are you using like Internet Explorer, using Firefox or Google Chrome?
I believe they're just internet based. They're applications that are loaded onto my desktop.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. So when you open one, the other one closes.
Yeah.
Almost like well, there's a couple of things that I would probably explore. One is I would look at some of the preference settings for the applications.
Okay.
Where it might say open in another window, and you just have to look at some of the preference settings and see how they're affecting the behavior of the other program. Also, the order in which you use it. So if you open, so you're telling me you open program one and program two that's open closes. If you open program two, does program one close?
Nope.
So
but the program that will close out the other one, it times out after a certain amount of period.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I open it up first and that one was to time out and I have to re-log back in, it'll then automatically close out the same application.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if you're using a browser when you're using those applications? Does it look like it's got the face of Google Chrome or Internet Explorer while you're using it?
It looks like Internet Explorer.
Internet Explorer. So you might want to associate one of those applications with a different browser, and that might make the program go away.
Oh.
Or the problem go away.
Yeah, the problem.
So in other words, both those applications are associated probably with Internet Explorer being your default browser. So maybe changing one of them to use a different browser. And if you don't have another browser on your system, I highly recommend it, because that's one of the ways that I use to troubleshoot is it happening with this one or that one, you know, what order and so forth. So Google Chrome is a good one. Safari is one. Internet Explorer, Microsoft Edge with Windows 10, and Firefox. So, but take one of those applications and change the browser that's being used to a different one.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. That's a good solution.
And then have your IT department call me.
Yeah. Bob in Franklin, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I've got a Dell computer with Windows 10 operating system, and it's got a lot of Microsoft on it, Edge and so on. I was wondering if there are any free word processing or spreadsheet programs that I could download.
Google has their whole suite, you know, Google Docs. They have a spreadsheet. They have word processing. Stuff to work with pictures. So just go to google.com and I believe on the, I don't know where they list it, you know, but it's there.
But it's there.
It's there. Yeah. You can even just do a search on Google Docs, Google Spreadsheet. It's all there. And it works well. It's compatible with all the popular spreadsheets that are out there. And
would it work? Work with the Edge. I have Edge.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
Yep.
There you
go.
You
know, and for those that people don't realize it, Windows 10, which is what Edge works with, Windows Internet Explorer is still on that computer. You just have to go looking for it. So if you still want to use Windows Internet Explorer, it's still there.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. all kinds of issues we can talk about today with Peter Green. Pete is the computer consultant with Infostar.com, visits with us regularly to help with your personal computer problems. And if you have a question, we have some open lines so we can get you on pretty quickly. Just go to 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at your computer questions today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions and comments. Pete, at this time of the program, we always take a look at your top 10 list of places to visit online. And what have you got for us?
I won't disappoint. I got some really, really good help up there. So if you go to Infostar.com, and the top, on the top left is the top 10 archives or the current top 10. The first one is called LifeWire, and it's a resource dedicated to helping you understand technology. So there's how-to, assistance, fixing suggestions, and a lot more. Another popular tech resource is called Tech Radar, and it's well organized and includes product reviews, news, and downloads about technology stuff. Number three, identitytheft.gov, you know, with what happened with Experian. It was like a 140 million ID breach. I got a notification from them, so I participated in one of the resources they provided. Figured it can't hurt.
Yeah.
So identitytheft.gov is a federal government resource to check out. I had the opportunity to go to an island that was not hit by a hurricane in August, and I went to a restaurant. And the reason I'm putting this up there is it's a great little Italian Greek restaurant, but it's just a simple website, you know. So if you're a business and you want to put up, because I've had people call me about this, it's a simple website that's communicating, hey, this is who I am, this is what we do, this is where we're located, and this is it. That's it.
Okay.
There's no selling or anything going on. Just information based, and that's part of what web is about. So it's ZUZUROH. Number five is called fanragsports.com, and it's resource news and information about all the major sports, including fantasy sports. If you're going on a cruise, and I haven't gone on a cruise in like 30 years, so I use this resource to help me plan. It's called Cruisely, and it's spelled CRUZELY.com. Another website is truthinadvertising.org, and their mission is to be the online resource dedicated to helping consumers protect themselves as related to advertising. Number eight is called PicClick, PicClick.com, and it's a resource that claims to help you find stuff faster on eBay, but I haven't used it yet, but I'm going to try it. But they claim to have over 314 million visits since the year 2008.
Wow.
That's a lot. Number nine, I talked about IP addresses. So what is your IP? Larry, do you know how to find that out? What's your IP? What's your connection? What's your port of entry onto the internet?
No, I wish I did.
If you go to whatismyip.com, it will tell you. So that's a great resource for that. Remember I mentioned about scammers using remote control desktop solutions? Well, number 10, I listed as many as I had in my memory. And SupremoControl.com is one. It's spelled SupremoControl.com. And there's a whole bunch of others there. but I talk about dealing with scammers, and do not let them have access remotely to your computer. They are liars. They will steal your information. And if you call me and tell me that that happened to you, I already warned you, don't let it happen to
don't
you.
Don't let it.
And then I put up tips there about creating the recovery thumb drive and also the missing fonts and how to get off the call list of scammers and stuff like that.
All available at infostar.com.
Yep.
Dave in Appleton has a question for you. Let's go there. Dave, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have an ancient version of Microsoft Works. It's 2003. And the...
You said Works, right?
Yes, I'm sorry.
W-O-R-K-S.
Yeah, with okay. Excel, Word, and so forth.
Yep.
Yeah, and the Excel and Word, or Excel and Word work fine, but I've lost my Outlook a month ago, and I can't figure out how to get it back. Is it too late? I don't want to pay $100 a year for it if I don't have to, for the new one.
So you're saying the Outlook just doesn't work?
Right, and I've tried, I've gone back on whatever information I had when I got it and, you know, put in all the info, and it's still not working, so... So, and sometimes if I'm trying to send something to someone else from the web or whatever, I use Firefox. It'll come up, but if I type the address and so on, then it's not working. So maybe this is a lost cause.
Have you tried reinstalling it?
Yes, I have the original disks.
Okay.
And that didn't work either.
Huh.
That's there
really
might,
weird.
There might be some just bad registry entries that need to be removed.
Within
the operation. Which version of Windows are you using?
10.
You're using Windows 10?
Yeah.
And you're telling me you're using Microsoft Office products from 2003?
Yeah.
Okay.
maybe just don't support it anymore? Or?
Well, you might have a problem with Windows 10. I mean, where I work, we like Windows Office 2010,
mm-hmm.
and we found it to be more stable than 2003. We were on 2003 for a very long time, and it had some buggy issues with it. And I support a lot of users with Outlook, and I found problems with Outlook for the 2003 version.
Oh, so you can still get 2010?
You can get. I know on eBay, I've purchased Office 2010 keys from people that have they're essentially scrapped computers that have had them uninstalled, and the keys work fine.
Oh,
so you can go the more expensive route and buy the disks. Or you can go the least expensive route and just buy a download that has the proper key associated with it.
Yeah. But I should probably give up on 2003.
I'm just saying, from my experience, I'm just saying you could try, you know, cleaning up your system and try reinstalling 2003. But I'm saying that the 2003 version of Outlook was buggy. I mean, I had issues with it. Uh-huh. And when we moved to 2010, my life got a lot easier.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck.
I'll give it a try. Thank you.
Yep.
Norman in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Norman.
Hello.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a Dell relatively new computer, Windows 10. And just today, it's that I run word processing and I use Microsoft Edge to get on the internet. Now, when I started up my computer, I have, and try to get to Microsoft Edge, I have two blank pages, one of which is says Twitter, and the other is just a blank white page. I tried to close them out. I hit the X in the corner. That didn't work. I did alternative F4. That didn't work. And I can't get to the internet because I can't close out these files or these pages.
What you should do is, it sounds like something just kind of misfired on, you know, with your Microsoft Edge. Mm-hmm. What you can do is hit Control-Alt-Delete, and run your system manager, and then close the Edge application through that screen.
Okay.
And then you can try starting Edge again, but I'd probably reboot the machine and then bring Edge back up and see. Well,
I've been shutting it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then restarting it. Mm-hmm. And I get the same I get the same thing up here. I didn't go to Control Alt Delete. I just mm-hmm. been doing I've been doing Alt Delete. And I can't get anywhere.
So when you say you've been shutting the machine down, do you just like turn it off, or you've been just like properly closing it?
Well, I don't know what properly closing.
I hit the button. You click on the left side, very left corner, is like a Windows start button, or you know where you can click on it, and then there's a symbol that comes up that gives you the option to do restart or shutdown. That's where you should shut it off. If you just pull the plug on your computer or just power it off, over time you begin to corrupt files. So programs start to misbehave when the system isn't shut down properly or restarted.
So give that a shot, and that should help a lot.
Yeah, yep.
Yep, there we go. Thanks, Norman. Sam in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. Peter, I'm hoping you can help me with a kind of a desperate issue that I've got with my computer. It started acting up a little bit and shutting and hanging up on me, so I'd have to shut it down or restart it. I'd have to do a hard restart, and then I would do a soft reboot just to make sure everything was okay. And it hiccuped a few times like that about a couple of weeks ago, and then all of a sudden my cursor started to act a little jaggy as it went across the screen, and then it just completely froze up in the center of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried, I was using a cordless mouse, so I just assumed, well, my mouse went bad. Well, first I changed the batteries, obviously, and then I tried a hardwired mouse, and still nothing. And I checked, the computer does recognize both mice. It does see them. So now I'm at a loss what I can do. Do you have any ideas?
So do you use, well, first question, which version of Windows are you using?
I believe it's Vista.
Vista, okay.
Was that the one before 10?
No, that's actually 8. Vista was right before 8. It was after 7.
Then it's 8, yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay. Are you using any antivirus software in your system?
Norton.
Are you keeping it up to date?
It is.
Okay. So you've tried two different mice on your system, a cordless one and a hardwired one, and the mouse is not moving at all.
Right. Sometimes I'll see the cursor in the center of the screen,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes when I reboot it, the cursor's gone, but if I hit Control to find out where it is, it's still in the center of the screen.
Mm-hmm. What I would try, if you can reboot your system in safe mode, how long has the problem been going on?
How do you do safe mode on that version? I tried holding down F12 and F1, and I can't figure it out. I don't remember how to do it.
It should be the F8 key.
Oh, F8. Oh, yep. No wonder.
Yep. So you bring it up in safe mode and try and see if you can restore to a prior restore point.
Okay.
Maybe there was an update that caused an issue. Because if you're saying you're having a problem with two different mice, that's not typical. I'm not saying put a third one in there to see if that cures it, but I've seen it where I've replaced what I thought was new twice for a third time, and then it actually worked.
I bought another computer in the interim because it's my business computer. I can't be without it.
Right.
And the mouse that I was using was the mouse from a new computer, which, it does work on a new computer. So.
Yeah.
Yep. So one is to do a system restore. The other one is to do a system repair. And what I would do is I would do a search on the internet to guide you through it, to find out and guide you through how to do a system repair. There might be some damaged system files that need to just be reinstalled. And when you find that online, it just, there are a lot of tutorials out there. You could even probably do a YouTube search on it, and it'll just guide you through the steps, you know, of how to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to do without a mouse, though.
No, you can actually do it, because upon boot up, then you just have to make choices, and you can usually arrow through the choices and hit enter. You don't really have to point to them with a mouse. You can use the trick with Windows is you can use the tab key, you can use the alt key, you can use the cursor and the enter key to make, you know, guide you through and make choices.
So the first thing you asked me about was a virus program. Do you think this might be viral?
It's possible. But I would check and make sure that the operating system is intact. And like I said, trying to do a system restore to an earlier restore point to see if that affects a change in your mouse behavior would be one thing. And then if it's not that, then doing a system repair to see if there are any corrupt system files would be another. And then if it's not that, then trying to, you know, do a scan to look for potentially a virus on it would be another.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Yeah. Thanks for calling, Sam. Karen in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you guys doing this
week? Good. Appreciate the call.
Okay. Peter, way back when, I remember you talking about having a problem with this monitor screen and it kind of fades, and I think you said then it could be a cord problem. Mine is Dell All-in-One.
Okay.
And so there are times I turn it on, and anything in black looks like it's hieroglyphics, and if it's in color, then I can see it clear, and other times I turn it on, it works perfectly fine. So it leaves me kind of trying to figure something out. I have changed where I plug it in as well. I think you'd made that suggestion in the past also.
Right.
So I'm.
So you said it's an all. You said it's an all-in-one system.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that means if the I've checked with a couple of dealer places, Best Buy and that kind of stuff, and they tell me they think the monitor is going. Mm-hmm. So that means a whole new computer.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be the power source. It could be some of the capacitors over time. I know Dell has had issues with capacitors on system boards drying out. That was a long time ago. So I would call Dell and tell them what you're experiencing and see if they could shed some light on it.
Okay.
Because they're the manufacturer. They're going to have, you know, you've got the model.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the best place to start. And then they're going to tell you what your options are.
Yeah.
They might even say, you know, we're really sorry about this. and we understand your pain. So we're willing to offer you an exchange or an upgrade. So, you know, sometimes that happens. They want to keep you quiet.
Mm-hmm.
and happy. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your help today. I love your program. And, of course, Larry has always got great guests on.
Thank you,
have a great
Karen.
Day.
And if they don't mention it, maybe you could mention that.
Yeah.
I would.
Why not?
What the heck? Thanks, Karen. Oh, boy. Tim in Wales, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Hi.
Hey, I'm looking for a recommendation on a backup utility. I'm running basically the latest Windows 10, and I'd like something that's going to let me do incremental backups.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of got rid of that.
I think I have a link to it in the web top 10. It's called Macrium, Macrium. And they have a home version. They have a work version. They have a networking version. It can do all different kinds of backups. So you can do a full backup, and then all successive ones are incremental. You can tell it how many full backups you want to keep. So the first Monday of the month, of every month, it makes a full backup, and it keeps four of them if you want, or it keeps eight of them.
Yeah.
I think price-wise, it's like $69 for the home version, $75 for the workstation. I've used it over the years, and I found it to be very, very user-friendly, a lot of options. You can exclude files, you can include files, you can tell it not to back up hidden files. You can create all sorts of schedules. I think it's pretty user-friendly. You can even create a rescue disk in case something happens to your computer to try and bring it up with a slightly different version of the operating system so you can still try and talk to it.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
Good luck.
Judy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I have been having a problem getting my Yahoo email for a couple of weeks, and it comes up with a big white block over it all saying manage accounts, easily switch, add, or remove Yahoo accounts on this computer. Gives me two choices, to add an account or sign out of all. I don't want to sign out, and I don't want to add. What should I do?
So you don't have access to your Yahoo email?
Correct.
When you first noticed that, what was going on?
Well, actually, I had been away for a couple of weeks, and when I came back, I couldn't get my email.
So when you were traveling, did you have access?
No, I didn't. I didn't use it at all. I didn't have access. I didn't try.
Do you have I use Google email, and their Gmail system, and they have a means of contacting you to give you access to your account, typically using a cell phone and text messaging, you know, to like do a secondary validation on who you are.
Actually, they did. When I looked under the help button, mm-hmm. it said I could get this help by having the access through a cell phone, mm-hmm. but it's an old cell phone that I gave to my husband, and it doesn't have any texting. It's really old.
Hmm.
So I couldn't do that. It said, we'll send you a text. Well, we don't get texts on that phone.
Yeah. You're probably going to have to contact Yahoo and see what your alternatives are for doing that.
Okay. And how do I look up Yahoo just on the Internet? Phone number, or how do I find
it? I mean, I think that's the best place to start. I know this just happened to me Friday where I got a text message that said, here's your single-use PIN number for eBay. And I was like, why am I getting a text message? Somebody actually tried to hack into my account because I actually called eBay. So I know eBay is accessible by, you know, picking up the phone and calling. All I could say, I have not had experience with trying to get into a Yahoo email account, but I would think that if you've got an old cell number associated with it, that's a definite problem in trying to, you know, communicate with them. So,
all right, I'll try to see if I can reach them.
You're going to have to reach out to them.
There you go. And Mark in Park Falls, do you have a quick question for us?
Yeah, I have a Compaq Presario 8000, and we had a power outage, and right after the power outage, I can no longer get it to come on. The desktop appears for like 2 seconds and then it disappears, and I was wondering if you would have any tips as to how to maybe get that back.
So are you saying it comes up and then it just goes blank and then it's like
off? Yes, it goes black.
Like it's completely off?
Well, you can tell it's on, but it looks like it's off, yes.
Okay. So you had you experienced this so you had a power outage. Did you actually shut it off? Or was it?
It was on when the power outage occurred, and then when the power came back on, the monitor would no longer come on. But it comes on for like 2 seconds. I can mm-hmm. see the desktop, and then it disappears.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, there are a number of ways to try and troubleshoot this. But it sounds to me like it's a bad power supply in the system.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, if you plug the monitor into another system, it's probably going to work. It sounds to me like it's the computer that's having the issue, and it's probably a power supply that needs to be replaced.
Oh.
And it's probably the surge protector that you had on it is old and not actually protecting you against surges.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. And, Pete, thank you so much.
Always great, Larry.
You're going to be back. Yeah, you're going to be back on December 4th. We'll do it all over again.
Yep.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. He'll be back, as I said, on December 4th, and we will do it all over again. Tomorrow at this time, Jim Ward's back to talk about vehicle maintenance and what you can do to get ready for the winter driving season. That's at 11 o'clock. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.